First, 38 freight train cars derailed and caught fire in East Palestine, Ohio, back on February 3rd. Local residents faced evacuations, and the aftermath of the chemical fires continues to raise health concerns long after residents were allowed to return to their homes. Before derailing, that Norfolk Southern freight train had passed over track sensors intended to alert the railroad to mechanical problems. A new report from ProPublica looks into safety concerns about trains, including the ever-growing length of freight trains and apparent instructions by Norfolk Southern that allow monitoring teams to instruct crews to ignore alerts from those track sensors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you worry about the freight trains you see rolling, maybe through your own community? What would you like to see happen to improve freight train safety if you work or have worked on railroads yourself? Do you see anything that worries you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org. Topher Sanders is a reporter for ProPublica covering railroad safety. Topher, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Topher, that East Palestine derailment I talked about, I think it put a lot of people's attention on rail safety. That's not the first or only incident involving long trains. Can you talk a little bit about the history of what you and your colleagues are digging into at ProPublica?
Absolutely. Yeah, we were able to read through more than 600 investigative reports from the FRA dating back to 2005. And we found that going all the way back to 2005, there were smatterings of incidences involving long trains, enough so that an agency like the FRA, who was being given warning by labor and warning by other industry heads that long trains were coming to the industry and should be paid attention to, that the agency could have been a little bit ahead of where they are right now had they paid attention to that.
Now, the FRA, that's the Federal Railroad Administration. Are they the lead when it comes to regulating the railroad industry?
They are for regulating the railroad industry as far as safety goes. When it comes to commerce, that's the STB, that's the Surface Transportation Board. But for safety, absolutely, it's the FRA.
Now, let's stay with those long trains you were talking about. People might have noticed this anecdotally, but it's the real deal. You report that trains, in fact, have gotten longer over the years, and there are some big business reasons behind that. Can you talk about that growth in just the sheer number of cars on our freight trains?
Yeah, freight trains have gotten far longer than they were. These are not your grandfather's freight trains. They're twice the size, sometimes three times the size that freight trains used to be. And it's a core principle of a new business model called precision scheduled railroading. It's been around for some 6, 7, 8 years, depending upon which company you talk about. And making the trains longer and making sure that they stop less frequently, keeping the trains moving on the tracks, and that length is a part of that. They roll into another shop. Sometimes they don't even rearrange the trains to make sure that they are balanced and put together properly. They just slap what they need to on the back of that train and keep it pushing down the track. And that creates some physics problems that sometimes help cause the trains to leave the tracks.
Now let's talk about the length. I mean, we're talking about trains that are over 1.4 miles long. Did I read this right?
You did. I mean, and sometimes those are the small trains. We've encountered trains that are 3.4 miles long.
You talked to the railroad companies and groups that would respond to your requests and the FRA. The gist is, I think, hey, we don't have a lot of recorded incidents of long trains being responsible for collisions. But then on the other hand, you found that the FRA, the railroad regulator, doesn't track how long these trains are. We just don't have a lot of data on this, right?
That's absolutely right. By and large, there's long trains all over the network, and you know, you can safely assume those trains are making it to their destination, but that is an assumption. There is no data that's being collected on a proactive basis that really ties the length of trains to any of the incidences that are occurring on our track networks. And that's really needed for us to arrive at, are they safe? How safe are they? Do there need to be changes? We need the data to answer those questions.
You share a story from about 5 years ago, July 2017, train derailment in Hindman, Pennsylvania, that seemed to have some red flags for the future of these long trains. Can you tell us a little bit about this story?
Absolutely. That train has become infamous in train circles. It was a train that was headed through Hyman, Pennsylvania, and as the train left its original destination, it got longer and longer as it was going along its journey. And then it hit one of the steepest grades in CSX's territory, and that's where we started to find the train having problems. The way the train was built, it had a lot of its tonnage and weight at the back end of the train, and in the middle were empty cars. And it went down a steep grade. And as it's going down a steep grade, they used brakes to try to control the train. And those brakes, combined with the empty cars in the middle, created dramatic physics problems that had the train kind of crushing on itself, and cars popped off of the track. And there was a big explosion, and they had to evacuate that town for 3 days.
Talking to Topher Sanders, reporter for ProPublica, covering railroad safety, talking about his reporting on long trains, on train safety issues after the East Palestine, Ohio derailment. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about how all of this works. If you have observed these long trains coming through your neck of the woods, if you have experience working in this industry and you're listening, love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Topher, another piece you focused on safety procedures and cases where apparently by some railroads policy, they say, we don't need to stop and slow down based on some of these red flags we're seeing. What did you find out?
Yeah, that was a story that we did looking at Norfolk Southern's policy, where they have a desk of, smart individuals that get a bunch of data from what they call these wayside detectors. And based on the data they receive, these trains can go by one of these wayside detectors, get an alert that otherwise a crew might need to pay attention to. And if the wayside detector help desk has information that tells them otherwise, they'll tell them just keep on mushing. And there's been some issues with whether or not these detectors are giving the crew the information they need, and whether or not the businesses, the corporation, the railroads are heeding the information coming off the detectors. We identified one accident where they hit one of these detectors, they stopped the train. The crew, I think, had some concerns about continuing with this particular car. They gave the alert. The company, Norfolk Southern, said, keep on. 3 or 4 miles down the track, that train derailed. So that was also in Ohio. So that gives you an indication that sometimes these wayside detectors are giving information that maybe the companies are not heeding.
You also talked to another group of stakeholders, unions that represent the railroad employees. What kind of things did you hear from them about these concerns, both about the long trains and about safety procedures that, might slow things down for the tracks, but might make things a little safer?
Yeah, labor's really concerned about all of this, and that's not a surprise. These are the types of things that labor unions often are concerned about. And what you'll hear from the company side is that those concerns coming from labor are more about generating new job opportunities. But where the truth lies in that is somewhere probably in the middle.
Meaning, the labor side of this says, hey, these log trains mean fewer workers. Is that what you mean?
That's exactly right. Right. Long trains mean fewer workers, fewer train starts, and the companies acknowledge all of that. In fact, there was they cut a bunch of positions when they started rolling out PSR and rolling out these long trains. And the workers say, no, it isn't about creating jobs. It's about creating safe trains. So that's the conversation that's happening between labor and the companies.
Talking to Topher Sanders, reporter at ProPublica, covering railroad safety. We're talking about his reporting and some of the reasons we've seen some disruptive freight train accidents, concerns about longer freight trains with a lot more cars on them, shorter staffing, as we were just hearing, concerns about safety protocols and how they're followed. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions? What do you want to know about train safety, how it is enforced? What are your reactions to this big derailment and chemical fire in East Palestine? How would you like to see freight trains regulated? Do you think some of the concerns are overblown? Do you have experience in the industry yourself? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Topher Sanders, who covers railroad safety for ProPublica. He's sharing his reporting on the relationship between the freight train industry and its regulators and some of the common issues that led up to some of the bigger recent train derailments, including the length of trains. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you worry about the length of freight trains? 2 miles plus in some cases? Call in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Ralph is with us in La Crosse. Ralph, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what do you want to bring up, Ralph?
Well, I have a question about braking systems. I live in La Crosse along the Burlington Northern Santa Fe tracks, and I've noticed, the same thing, long trains. And frequently we'll see engines on the back of a long train as well as the front. And I think it's got to do largely to maintain air pressure in the braking system, which is really a fairly old system. I know that the rail industry has been recommended to have electronic braking systems, which they've resisted. Theoretically, those electronic brakes probably do a better job. They grab simultaneously. So the question is, how much of the long train problem has to do with simply having an air braking system in it?
Interesting, Ralph. Thanks a lot for the call. Topher, is that a concern you've encountered in your reporting?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the question, Ralph. And, right now, the FRA, credit due to them on this, they're actually doing an extensive braking study at present. I think they're in the last phase of that study where they're going to do some real world modeling to kind of learn as much as they can about the braking systems, particularly in longer trains. I will say that some of the issues that longer trains have when it comes to their train handling and their makeup, a braking system wouldn't mitigate those issues. If the train is built poorly, meaning way too much tonnage in the back, too many empty cars in the middle, is going over wavy, topsy-turvy terrain, your braking system won't be able to help you in those instances because some of those cars are just going to start to crush upon each other. But Ralph's question is a good one. And the distributed power units that he's noticing, those engines on the back, are exactly what he's saying. They are to help create more braking power, but also give the train some more horsepower that it needs to get over its route.
Ralph, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Randy joins us now in Spring Green. Randy, hi.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. Wonderful article. I believe I read the article by the author. Thank you so much. It was very informative in the physics aspect of it. But I hope you'll address the point that when you have these rail sidings, so a train can go the other direction, these long trains, you're trying to put a 1.4-mile long train on a 1.25-mile long siding, and train cars are hanging out the rear end of this siding. And since you don't have cabooses anymore, nor have had them for years, nobody's back there letting somebody know, hey, train coming the other way, we still have some cars on the main line, you better stop. And it doesn't happen, and I've understood from the article that, of course, they have a crash.
Randy, thanks for the call. Topher, yeah, you did report on that.
Yes, Randy's right. And it is one of the earlier problems they observed with long trains is that, hey, man, parking lot's not big enough, basically. And so you had these trains sticking way out in the back. And also how that connects to another issue that many communities are concerned about, and that's blocked railroad crossings, is when you have these long trains sticking out of the siding, it backs up all the way along the line. And that's why you have now with these longer trains, you have more intersections and communities being blocked because not only can they not get into the sidings, but now they're sticking out much, much further into communities and blocking additional intersections where before maybe they blocked one and you had another intersection you could try to escape to. Now they're blocking two and three.
Thanks a lot for that call, Randy, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Topher Sanders, he covers railroad safety at ProPublica, looking at the freight train industry, the length of trains, the safety issues that they are involved in. Topher, let's get to this East Palestine, Ohio derailment now. Now, this is still being analyzed. We may not have all the answers for a while. What kind of things, though, have stood out to you so far?
I mean, it's all about the wayside detectors in this instance. And in instance for Norfolk Southern specifically, questions about were the thresholds set appropriately for them to be flagged when those ball bearings started hitting a certain heat threshold. And if you listen to the NTSB chairman when she gave her stand-up in front of the press, that's one of their key questions, because it looks like Norfolk Southern's threshold, meaning that, you know, hey, the ball bearing is showing this heat level, and it should flag the crew when it hits another heat level, that those thresholds were vastly different than the rest of the industry. And that maybe had they been adjusted and been different that night, maybe they would have pulled that train over when it hit that one wayside detector 20 miles away from where the derailment occurred. Maybe they would have pulled the crew over then and had them look at that train, and we would have never heard about East Palestine.
And big picture, it seems like, I don't know if this is fair, it seems like there's a disincentive for crews and administrators to want to report something like that because, hey, maybe it's a false alarm and it's really going to slow down our operations today.
There's some truth to that. Those wayside detectors do give, you know, false alarms. They do sometimes flag issues that aren't issues. Sometimes they've had a train come through, three trains come through, and the wayside detector is flagging the exact same issue on the exact same car on all three trains. And, you know, the probability of that is very, very low. And so sometimes they are malfunctioning and need to be repaired. And then other times they just need to be adhered to. And where the magic is on that is a real question, I think, for regulators. This is an unregulated part of the industry. Wayside detectors, the FRA, has no say on them whatsoever. And maybe they should. Maybe that's something that should happen after East Palestine. Someone should think about what role the government should have in regulating wayside detectors and those thresholds.
That takes me to another part of your reporting. You looked at efforts in Congress in some cases, at the state level and others, to add new regulations to the freight train industry. What kind of things did you find out?
Yeah, it's no dice if you're a state out there and you want to do something to try to regulate the rails. It's just not happening. State after state after state, particularly when it comes to block crossings, attempts to either try to shorten the trains or shorten the duration that the trains can sit at a rail side crossing, and it's just not happening. The state courts will reject it. If it goes to federal courts, they'll reject it. And there have been two attempts to get this into the Supreme Court. One was rejected outright, and the Supreme Court appears to be entertaining the latest attempt, and we'll see where that actually goes. But it is very difficult for states and local government to do anything about the rails if they find them to be a nuisance in their community.
How about at the federal level? Have we seen efforts in Congress to say, okay, we're going to add these new regulatory powers over trains?
Not a whole lot. And that is also the question that Congress is now asking itself after this big accident in Ohio. You're starting to hear voices that you normally don't hear on this issue. You're hearing some prominent Republican voices say that, hey, we're interested in PSR. What is that? Is it dangerous? Those are questions you normally don't hear from that side of the aisle. So maybe there's the temperature is changing and there could be some regulation coming down.
What are you watching for next in your ongoing coverage of railroad safety? What are some of the big open questions in your mind?
I think this question about the length of trains is a big one. Right now, there is a committee at the National Academy of Science doing some very diligent work where they're studying the issue, and they're supposed to come back with a recommendation for Congress after that. So I think that paying attention to what that committee says and what, you know, folks on Congress will do once the committee's done with its work and issues a recommendation. The National Academies of Science is highly respected. So I think that's something to watch in the industry.
And finally, I want to go back to Hindman, Pennsylvania. You talked to some of the people with their personal stories, people who lived near the tracks. Can you share just some of the like experiences they had of that derailment?
That derailment, nobody died in that derailment, first and foremost. And there was a dog that perished. That was the only casualty of that derailment. It feels like a miracle that's the case. And so when people reflect on that derailment, there were a lot of near misses. And all of those near misses, you can see it in their eyes. It still sticks with them. One gentleman, he fell asleep on his couch. Had he gone to bed that day, he would not be with us now. And when you talk to him, It's like he's instantly transported back to that moment. He can't even watch the news about train derailments today. So, and everybody we spoke with that was close to the derailment, who had to walk out of their front door and see those flames shooting into the sky, had to pack up all of their things, their clothes, and didn't even have time to do that. Just had to throw the kids and the pets into the car and go to hotels that they knew nothing about. All of those moments really stick with that community. And you can see what happens when a train with explosive power flies off the tracks and impacts a community like this.
Topher, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Topher Sanders is a reporter for ProPublica covering railroad safety. You can find a link to his recent stories at WPR.org/Central Time. He joined us today to share his reporting on some of the causes of major train derailments, some possible ways to prevent them, and some of the obstacles toward changes in that industry.